The Rising Coaches Podcast is brought to you by Just Play Sports Solutions. Are you still giving out paper scouting reports to your team? I'm talking about the two pieces of paper stapled together with the player's picture on it and a couple sentences about how they like to shoot from three or is a straight line driver. We can do so much more with our scouting reports, and Just Play can help you do it. How does it work? Your players download an app right to their phone, which they're on 24/7, right? Through that app, you can upload all kinds of content, not just scouting reports, but video analysis, game plans. You can assign who they're going to be guarding and let them watch personnel clips. You can make it interactive. You can have your players answering questions. You can throw in quizzes, and you can monitor their use, who's using it, and for how long. And the best part about Just Play is it's cheaper than their competitors. It is a no-brainer. For more information, visit JustPlaySolutions.com. Just Play Sports Solutions. Teach faster, prepare better. This week on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
That was the other part I probably didn't say enough. Why we went from 9 wins to 24 wins was recruiting. You know, when we weren't anything, we sold a vision.
Northern Kentucky assistant coach Sean Dwyer joins us to talk about how the Norse went from startup Division I program to NCAA tournament team. The former Michigan State manager shares stories and insight that he learned along the way from Tom Izzo, Billy Donovan, and Anthony Grant. This excerpt was taken from the 2017 Rising Coaches Conference at Marion University in Indianapolis, and we hope you enjoy it.
To do a decent job. I had them and the guys at Rising Coaches. What an awesome event to get you guys together. And I'd encourage you all to kind of just, as you listen to me, kind of put yourself in my shoes and draw some comparisons and see how I've walked in your shoes. But also to kind of bounce ideas and talk to one another, right? Because you got a lot of peers that are with you. Now, of our group here today, what do we have? We got a lot of managers. If you raise your hand if you're a manager, okay, GAs, and then I'm sure we have a lot of coaches, guys that are, you know, coaches at different levels. And I think, you know, it's really cool. I was a manager, and I'm going to go through my whole story, but I think the one thing that keeps coming up is if we can listen to each other and we can take different things from one another, but there is not a textbook way to get where you want to go. There really isn't. You know, I think we look at models and we try and draw things from the people you're going to listen to that stand up here from one another, like I said, but to sit here and say, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, there's a lot of gray area, right, in your career path and then in your everyday decisions. And so I think that'll be somewhat of a theme of the things that we talk about today. I'm probably going to be a little bit off the cuff. I put together a quick presentation over the last week. We got a lot going on this week. As far as, we have a kid that actually just came on campus today. We have elite camp tomorrow, and we have a visit of a kid I'm recruiting at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So I was trying to put as much energy into this because I think it's really important to try and help grow the game and help you guys out. Not that I have a whole lot of answers, right? I mean, I was you, right? But I think the one thing is, when I was in your shoes, I thought I had a lot of the answers. I thought I knew more than I did. And I think probably in the last 10 years or so since I was where you were at, hopefully I've got a little bit more knowledge and understanding, and maybe I can help you guys out a little bit. Just to get started, my purpose of being here today, I want to inspire you guys. I want to help you out. I want you guys to come away thinking, I can do what Sean Dwyer did. And I feel a little funny standing up here talking and saying those things because I don't feel like I'm anywhere close to where I want to be, and I don't think it's been very long since I was one of you, when I probably had some serious doubts and some questions if I was going to end up being an assistant coach. Because that step from support staff to assistant coach is tough. It's not easy. And then to inform you, kind of give you some thoughts, some of my experience to share and let you have some stuff to draw off of. And then introspection. Like anytime you do have a chance to do something like this, you get a chance to take a look inward at yourself, right? So for me, spending time and thinking about what I'm going to say to you, what I think is important, I think that makes me a stronger person and probably a better coach. I probably understand myself and everything that goes into coaching a little bit more and kind of who I want to be as a coach. About me, I'm pretty normal. I would think I wasn't a great player. I'm from Saginaw, Michigan. I'm 30 for a couple more days here. I'll be 31 on the 9th. You know, I'm single. I have a mom and dad, two sisters. You know, that's probably one thing that I've struggled with is finding the love of my life here in coaching, right? You know, I mean, they got the apps now, right? We can use those, maybe, you know, right? But you move around a lot. You're in places just a little bit here and there. And at the same time, you know, I kind of rushed into a relationship last year, and it didn't work out as well. So anyways, you better love coaching because it might be all you have some days. I played high school basketball. I was an okay player. You know, my dad was a really good player, probably my biggest inspiration. He played Division II basketball in our hometown of Saginaw, Michigan at Saginaw Valley State, which is the Division II school. This is my story, kind of where I've been. I'm going to break down each place. Like just overall, you know, it looks really cool, right? Michigan State, Florida, Arkansas, Alabama, like, wow. But as great as that's been, some of the things that you see up there that look good on paper, each one's its own experience. And there's some ups, there's some downs, there's some things that probably weren't so great. There's getting fired twice, and then having to deal with that stuff, right? So hopefully I give you some realness of kind of the steps that I took and let you, you know, it's great. I want to be an assistant coach, but it better be your purpose. It better be what you really want to do, because there's going to be some days that it isn't great. And there's going to be some things that you sacrifice. So I'll start off my journey, you know, a little bit here. These are some just quotes. I read a book recently, Resilience. I don't know if any of you guys have read it. It's a terrific book. Probably spoke to me more about coaching and life in general than anything I've ever read. I mean, I'm not like this big reader, but I try to read probably 5-6 books a year. And it's about a Navy SEAL, and he's writing to his friend who's battled alcoholism, coming back, and has really struggled with reassimilating himself to society. But within that, there's a lot of lessons on resilience, and it doesn't really talk about his battle with alcoholism and you know, all those things as much as it talks about, you know, how to live your life and how to be a better person. And I think there's a ton on coaching in it. So that was one of the quotes that was in there. There's a couple that I'll use in here because I just got done kind of studying the book. But there are some things which cannot be learned quickly in time, which we all have, must be paid heavily for their acquiring. I can sit up here and tell you a lot of things, but you're going to have to live your own story. You know, I can tell you the ups, the downs, the great, but there's going to be so many decisions you make that you're going to talk to your role models, you're going to talk to people, you're going to study what's happened before, you're going to think it through, but you're going to be the one that's ultimately responsible for what you end up doing. So I think that's a big one. You know, it's going to take time. And then I think most of you have probably heard about the Malcolm Gladwell quote, you know, 10,000 hours, you know, to be elite or to be a professional or be really good. Like, I was a video coordinator and I wanted to coach, and sometimes I'm pissed that I'm watching all this film and all this film. Well, then you kind of understand, that's why we did that. That's why they ran that action. This is probably what's coming next in the game. And it's just a bigger picture than you really ever know at that moment in, you know, where you're at. So make sure whatever task you have, you put your all into it, because I think there's greater things that you learn that you probably don't understand at the time, okay? Really make the most of your time. So my start, you know, I was, like I said, a high school basketball player. I didn't really have an in. There's nothing special about me. Michigan State was coming off of going to the Final Four in 2005 when I got hired. Shannon Brown, you know, Paul Davis, Maurice Aker, Drew Knight. So there's a lot of really good players. I mean, I went to a school with 50,000 students. So to be a manager was actually quite difficult. You had to, like, try out. I mean, there was 45 kids that came to the interest meeting. You had to practice, go to practice on the floor, practice office hours, make the cut, interviews. I mean, it was a little bit extensive. And I didn't really have, like, it's not like my dad had this great connection or my mom. We weren't boosters, you know. I mean, there was nothing. So I just had to go in and do a good job, and I thought it was what I wanted to do. But, like, if it didn't work out, I probably would be working in finance in Chicago or something. You know, I would have just lived a different life. And I remember sitting playing Madden with my friends, drinking beers, you know, 18, 19 in college, in the dorm, and being like, if that phone call comes from Kevin Pauga, who many of you have probably heard of, KPI, he was the ops guy at the time, or Big Video at the time, that my life was going to be different. You know, it was going to be a completely different path, and my purpose and my whole reason for being was going to probably be different. You know, I mean, 40 hours a week as a manager on top of my degree. Well, I got my finance degree. I did everything. Whatever. Long story short, I was there for 4 years. There's a lot of ups and downs. I think being a manager for Tom Izzo is probably different than being a manager for a lot of people. I think I learned that my head was up my ass a lot of the time. You know, just in regards to the way he it's just intense. Intensity, anything and everything is on, you know, great coach, but you better be strong-willed and you better be tough and you better work hard. And, you know, whether it's motivation out of fear for failure or what, you got to be on top of your game, you know. And I think there was a lot that I learned. But I think he held people accountable. I think his culture was terrific. You know, I think guys really worked hard and played hard and played for him. But it wasn't about, for me, you know, I had to do everything. I had to fill up water bottles. I had to keep stats. I had to clean his floorboards at his house. I mean, I had to help him move. I drive him everywhere, whatever. I mean, whatever it was, film his daughter's games. But like I said, it wasn't about that, you know. I didn't really ever make any money, and I think one thing that'll come up for you guys a lot is that your opportunity and your responsibility is always going to be greater than what you're going to get paid. You know, and it sucks. Like I think we all feel that way a little bit, right? Like even as an assistant coach at a big major that won 24 games, it's not like, hey, here's great job. We're going to give you a bunch more money, and there's a limit to what they can do, but you're preparing yourself for your career and what's next. And I think every day you got to kind of look at that. You know, at Michigan State, I think life was pretty good. There was an intensity. We went to the Final Four. Life was great. It was hard, but you were respected. And then it becomes what's next. You know, you got to go get a job. And I think the one thing that I did, Tom Izzo always helped me get a job, because when I was there, I would, like I said, film his daughter's games. I would, I don't know, pick up his wife from the airport. I would, whatever. And at the time, you're like, fuck, this sucks. Why am I doing this? But then when it came time for a recommendation, it wasn't really about basketball. It was about the relationship I had with him and his family and the people that were involved at the university. And they're still really good to me. Like, my sister ended up going and getting a job there. I mean, we're really close with the Michigan State family. But they're always there for me. So if you take care of people and you do your job regardless, like I was never going to coach. I did the least amount of coaching possible. No one cared what I had to say. But it helped me propel myself to what I wanted to do. So that ends, right? I end up at the University of Florida. But that wasn't where I was supposed to go, right? Sean Miller got the Arizona job, and I had a connection with Archie Miller. Archie was there. So I ended up agreeing to take a graduate assistant job at the University of Arizona. I was on the hook for like a month, looking at places, getting admitted to school. It's all good. They're looking at when I can come out. They're trying to get me out there. And then one day, Archie calls me, probably mid-June, late July. or mid-June, early July, and tells me that they're not going to have the position. They're going to have to go in a different direction. It had been done for like a year or a month and a half. I mean, it was a long time that I had agreed to go work in Arizona. So I'm like in the dumps. I mean, it sucks. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've been kind of off the gas on like some of these other leads I had. I was agreed to go there. And they weren't bad people. Like, I have no ill will. Archie's still really good to me when I see him. I don't really know Sean because I never really went out there. But, like, you know, it was fine. I was okay now. But, like, at the time, I was pissed. And those, you know, I sent out a million letters. I did all that. Tried like hell to get jobs. And I ended up thinking I was going to have to go to the NBA. So I fly down to Miami in an interview with the Heat. But I really wanted to coach college basketball. So when I do that, I stop at the University of Florida, and they end up offering me a job as an assistant video, kind of GA role, a couple days later. And I'll be honest, like, when I went to Florida, you think the University of Florida, you think Billy Donovan, you think it's going to be great. And they kind of told me, I thought I was going to get more money. I thought I was going to have more responsibility. When you go somewhere, when you've been somewhere for 4 years and then you go to a new program and you're a support role, there's going to be a period where it's probably not as great as you think it is, you know, or as you want it to be, right? Like, I was filming. I was cutting game. I was so not a part of the team. And I was on the floor every day at Michigan State. And I just didn't enjoy it that much. You know, it wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. And you can sit here and say, well, you're at the University of Florida. You're working for a Hall of Fame coach. Like, at the time, I was into myself, and I was kind of a victim of my circumstances, right? And I would encourage you to think about the bigger picture and not necessarily think about how you feel at that moment. Because I was putting myself in position to get the next job. I was with great coaches. It was Larry Shyatt, Richard Pitino, Rob Lanier, and Darren Hurts was that day. I mean, I was with all these great people, but like, I was away from home. I had been used to having a lot of say. You know, it's just, no one wanted, and it's fine, but no one really gives a shit what you have to say when you're a GA and sit in video, and it is what it is. We ended up having a decent season. We went to the NCAA tournament. We lost to Jimmer Fredette and BYU. But the other thing I learned a little bit, and I remember where I was when Richard Pitino told me, there's different ways to skin a cat. I came from Michigan State where everything was motherfucker, get your ass on the line, this, that, and the other. And then I go to Florida and Billy's, you know, talking about the psychology of shooting a free throw, and we're bringing in speakers, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, how are we going to win a game? I didn't understand it, but I was just inexperienced. So, like, I learned a lot at the University of Florida. It was great for me to get out of my comfort zone, right? And I learned a lot. Like, Billy was more of an offensive coach, ball screen motion. We put in, like, a new play every day. I was like, what in the hell is going on? Like, there was just so much that I learned that at the time I wasn't really happy with what I was doing. But if I really would have thought about it at the time and been mature enough to understand, I learned a lot. And honestly, I've been in the Florida coaching family since. Arkansas, Alabama, and Northern Kentucky. So, like I said, you may be unhappy with where you're at a certain moment. You may not see the bigger picture. But like, I probably sound like a whiny bitch, but I was at the University of Florida, right? But it just, every day, you know, you get up, you go to class at 7 a.m., you go to work, then you take a night class, then you go get up and do the same thing again, and you sit in the film room and you film, and you don't, it's a lot, right? But I think my purpose was to coach, and I think it was a great experience for me. From there, I got the video job at the University of Arkansas. I worked for John Pelfrey, and it was awesome. Like, John Pelfrey's a great human being. Like, you go in there, you sit down and say, Coach, let's just watch some film and hang out. I'm like, fuck, I gotta do this edit, I gotta do this. He's like, nah, don't worry about it, let's just talk. And I think he really invested in me as a person, and I really, really enjoyed being around him. And that's one thing I think about, and it's like, You know, some bosses you have, you're like, fuck, why is he so difficult? Why is he so hard? And you just pissed off. John Pelfrey was a good coach, and he was enjoyable to be around. You know, and I think that's one thing I'm going to strive to be, is have a positive atmosphere where people enjoy working. And but it was noticeable, right? It was year four when I got there, and he ended up getting fired that year, and I got fired. And I think there's some things that, you know, like everybody gets fired that's in this business. Not everybody, but most people do. You know, the people who try the most, who push themselves the most, you know, who, the most successful people all fail at some point. And but it was noticeable. At year four, I think, you know, they had some turnover with the roster. The culture was in flux a little bit. And it was the first time I wasn't at a place like Michigan State or the University of Florida where you were working for a Hall of Fame coach where everything was rosy from the standpoint of what they said went, where the culture was completely in great shape. And I think that kind of is one of my takeaways, is invest in your culture early. You know, having your culture when you take over a new job and making sure that's in place in year one, regardless of winning and losing, is a big deal, because that's going to continue to go throughout the year, and it's hard. Well, we end up getting fired at Arkansas, and I don't know what to do. You know, I was video coordinator. I found great relationships. You know, I think the one thing that once you get to a place like video, you can really, really kind of put your own spin on it, right? There's certain things you have to do, having the edits ready, the basics, but then what can you do to push the program forward? So from you, some of you guys, do your job and what's expected of you as best as you can, and then what are you going to do to push it forward? You know, make where you were better when you leave. Obviously, I might have left it better for Mike Anderson's group, but not for, you know. But I tried. And, you know, it's always a weird time when you get fired and you're on a staff and someone else comes in. I met with Mike Anderson. He ended up hiring his son. I think I had no chance, right? Like, it's just weird. It you know, some people can do it. It happened to me again at the University of Alabama. But I had to figure it out. And because I had formed a relationship with Tom Ostrom when I was at Arkansas, I was very close with him. He helped me get out with Tim Miles, right? And you'll see, like, I skipped that, right? Colorado State, I didn't put it up there. Because I was only there for 2 months, and Miles still busts my ass. Like, every time I see him on the road recruiting. But I got hired as video at Colorado State. And, like, this is another thing that may pop up in your career that's difficult, right? And you'll see it now. Like, I think somebody who just took a job at Illinois State that just left and went to Michigan. Like, sometimes you take a job and you're going to be tearing at yourself because someone else wants to hire you. And you haven't been there long, and it's like this dilemma. I don't know the right answer. A lot of people say you got to do what's best for you. Some people want to take, you know, be loyal. For me, I had been only at places for a year, and so it was kind of a weird deal. But I was trying to help someone else get the at University of Alabama video job, and then Anthony Grant called me one day and wanted to hire me. I was not trying to get the job, so then I had this, you know, double my pay. Alabama was preseason number 12 in the country. It was hard to say no to, so I thought I did the thing that was best for my career. I don't know if I did or not. I don't think there's ever any way to really tell. But you got to make a decision. You got to talk to the people you believe in. And then you, at the end of the day, are responsible. Like, I get stressed out. I had anxiety. I didn't know what the hell to do. Like, I'm fucking sitting in the office like a more nervous than a whore in church, I think is one of Tom Izzo's saying, right? It's weird. It's weird. And so, you know, I got through that. I went to the University of Alabama. I was video coordinator. One of Anthony Grant's big things, you know, we talked about my aspirations to be a head coach or to coach, and it's do the best. I'm sure you have. I've heard this a million times, but do the best job at the job you're in when you're in that job, and then the rest will take care of itself. Like, you know, be the best video coordinator you can be. So what did that, you know, we went from Exos to Sports Code. Try to implement iPads.
try to look at different ways to scout. Like, there was core things that you have to do, but then you got to grow your job, grow your role. So I would get those things done. And here's another one. Like, a lot of what the positions you're in, no one really wants to hear your opinion unless it's asked, right? Like, don't go, you know, managers, a sit video, unless someone wants to hear what you have to say. Like, every once in a while, we'll have someone on our staff say something about recruiting, and it's like, well, you go get a better player, right? I've invested a year in trying to get a relationship with this kid. I've evaluated him 7 times. He came and played 1 time at team or elite camp, and now you, and it irks you, right? And it's like, you don't know all of the facts all the time, and you're inexperienced. You probably don't understand your inexperience, and it's hard to understand at the time because we're all want to be high achievers. We all want to take the next step. But I really believe in that. Like, until someone trusts you enough and you've had enough sweat equity in the job, you probably don't need to be giving your opinions. Like, if you're in a meeting, be quiet, wait till you're called on. And then what ended up happening in Alabama is, you know, I think a big thing is understand how your boss works. Like, Anthony Grant at the time would sit in his office most of the time with his door closed and really liked getting notes. So emails or written, whatever. So I understand what makes him tick. So once I had all my necessary tasks done, I would sometimes give him some analytical stuff or what I thought. I would break down practice. I would try to go above and beyond. Why? Because I was trying to grow my role. And in growing your role, you gain the trust of your head coach. You grow what they want out of you, what they expect out of you, and soon enough, he's asking my opinion. He's having me break down film of recruits. He's, you know, asking me to do parts on scouting, you know, and I think it wasn't because it was some big seminal moment. It was just doing my job every day and get a little bit more, incrementally better, incrementally, and then eventually he wanted, you know, my input. And so it takes a long time to get to that point. Well, eventually, you know, John Brandon hired me as an assistant coach, but he had been involved with jobs, and he was involved with one, and Anthony called me out to his house, and he said, you know, Sean, if John doesn't get this job, you know, I want to make you the special assistant to the head coach, and I want you to just come up with ideas, come up with things to make improve us. So my biggest thing was mostly offense. We struggle with offense, so I try to do a lot of analytical stuff from offense, but from an offensive standpoint. But like, I would call guys in the NBA. I would call other special assistants, like Ryan Peden, and I talked a lot. I think he's an assistant at Ohio State now, but he was special assistant at Illinois at the time. And we would just discuss different ways we can make our program better. What can we do? What are we missing? What avenues? What do we have to do? And so, you know, I think that was a really cool job. I probably one of the, I mean, you didn't have to recruit, but I would really just analyze our system from an offensive standpoint. I took on some compliance tasks, took on some on-campus recruiting things. But if you ever get to be a special assistant, you know, I think that's a good way to think anyways. Like, once you've done what you're supposed to do, how can you add value? What are some new things? And one of the things you got to understand, though, is anyone can come up with a lot of ideas, right? Like, I can say, let's jump that ball screen. Let's run this drill. And I think that it's got to be well thought out on your end if you're going to have an idea, because head coaches can take it all in, but they can't do everything, right? So you have to give them, you owe it to them to give you your very best. You know, you owe it to them to really research and do the time. You know, if you really believe in something, you do a study or something, yeah, bring them the idea. But just throw shit at the wall. There's too many things you can be putting on your head coach's plate, because there are a lot of decisions that on things that come across their desk every day. So make sure that when you do bring something, make sure it's been well thought out and it's not just what you want to do. Well, anyways, real story. So we get fired at Alabama. How about this story? So we come in, we think we're having practice for the NIT. There have been people were talking to Anthony, he's coming back. He's not coming back, but most people thought he was coming back in time. Well, Auburn goes on this run. I don't know what happens. We end up coming in for a pre-practice meeting, and we sit down, and it's me and the three assistants and him. And we think, okay, what drills are we going to do? He's like, guys, Bill Battle's going to come in. We're going to be relieved of our duties. We're getting fired. This is what happened. So then the AD comes in, talks to the guys. And, you know, I had been through it at Arkansas. Actually, when we were at Arkansas, I'm driving out to Pelfrey's house because we have a meeting, and I hear it on the radio. Like sports talk or whatever, like the 20, you know, it was before Twitter and stuff. And it's crazy. So we go down there, we have a meeting with the team, and I go home. I had actually been out the night before in Birmingham. I was like kind of hungover. I'm tired. I'm like, fuck, I got fired. I mean, life's not that good. So I'm like dozing in and out on the couch. The selection show had come, and I'm like half asleep, and John Brandon calls me. He's like, hey, we're in the NIT. And I'm like, you got to come up here. We got practice. I'm coaching the team. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, we're fired. I'm half asleep. No, it was real. So we end up playing in the NIT. That was hard. That was hard. You know, your boss is fired. You're playing in the NIT. And you got to have the motivation. Well, we ended up making the most of it. And it's a good thing we did, because I'm not sure John Brandon would have got the head coaching job in Northern Kentucky if we had beaten. We beat Illinois by like 35. So our guys played out of their minds. And then we lost to Miami, Florida at their place in a close game. But he did a really good job. He ends up getting the Northern Kentucky job. You know, and you can say, how do I get on the road? How do I become an assistant? I don't know. In my experience, it was my relationship with an assistant coach that got a job. I don't know how to help you get from, you know, you can network as much as you want. I don't know if that's going to get you there. Like I said, you got to blaze your own path. You take what other people did. You try and make it work for you as best as you can. So great, I'm an assistant coach, right? Fucking hardest summer of my life. First, it's like unbelievable. Like, it's like inhumane, right? I get the job. I go recruit in New Orleans. There was an Under Armour event down there. Before I even get, if year one is like horrible. So if you're ever on a staff on year one, especially if it's like a rebuild, that shit is intense. Right, so we get the job. I do some scout. I do some recruiting in New Orleans. I sleep on someone's couch, whatever. Then, like, I got to go back and pack up my bags. I know I'm going with John because we've been so close. So I get there. It's like 10 o'clock at night. You know, his parents lived up there, so we were staying at his parents' place. I'm thinking, okay, we're gonna go to the house. We just got there. No, we're in the office at like 2 a.m. I just driven from Alabama to Cincinnati, and 8 hours, 9 hours, and we go to work. And we do it again the next day. And we're in there watching JUCO film, calling people, that players that suck, that can't help us win. I mean, it's like, we have no idea what the hell's going on. Like, you don't know. You get a million names thrown your way. It's a lot. But one thing that we did that I think helped us go from 9 wins to 24 wins in 1 year was not rushing to fill our roster with bad players. Because there's a million players out there. But we didn't want just accumulate bodies. You know, I mean, it's exhausting how many team times we had, like, bad players on campus to work them out. We probably had 55 unofficial visits. I mean, fly kids in, spend time with them, then coach doesn't land. It was fun. It was unbelievable. But that was one thing. I think the biggest things we did was lay the groundwork for the culture. So our core values are trust, toughness, and sacrifice. You know, and we do an exhaustive job of getting those implemented. Like, I almost feel like coach is like a fucking computer sometimes, like a machine, like trust. And he says the definition, and he knows like every fucking bullet point. It's unbelievable. And he'll bring up when it, you know, it's just constantly relating those core values to examples that come up. You know, we have standards for each core value. Like toughness, I think one, you know, is not going to our knees during workout. I mean, there's different things. And I think that's one thing you got to do is just continuing to develop and think about. But I think fighting for our culture in year one and not taking in, bringing in marginal players were two really big things for us. The guys that we brought in were a transfer from Alabama and a JUCO guy we kind of backdoored from the school. that had some classes to get done. I mean, that's, and he averaged 14 a game last year, probably going to be preseason first team. And then we got lucky a little bit. We develop our guys, but I think the core values of the culture, establishing that culture early in the program, I can't emphasize it enough. Like, on Sunday nights, we do what we call Sunday night conversations, and we get everybody in a circle, and we talk about real hard things that are going on in everybody's life. We talk about the points of our core values. You know, and it's like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. There's shit that gets brought up on guys in their families or what they're going through that are real personable, like real issues, like things that them probably being able to talk about and share with others elevates our culture, elevates our team, elevates our bond. And, you know, and I think it's been good. Like, there's nothing that pisses me off more than I'm coming off the golf course because I got to go on 6 o'clock on July 15th or whatever, June 15th to a Sunday night conversation at 6 p.m. But when you get in, damn, there was a lot that we got out of that. And I think our guys are really tight in part because of it and just because of the culture. So as much as you can do to get in what you believe in. So a couple key takeaways. I think I've said it a few times, but there's no textbook way to get where you're going. You know, there's a million issues that are going to come up. Like, I can't give you an answer. No one can give you an answer. I could call the best coach in the world, and he can give me his thoughts. But no one's going to know your situation more than you're going to know it. And you're just going to have to rely on people. But also, at the end of the day, it's going to be on you. You got to gather the info and then rely on models, like I said. Patience. If you want to coach, go coach high school. Go coach, you know, get a job. Maybe you get a job in JUCO. Maybe you can get a job. But if you want to be a Division I head coach, it's going to take a level of patience in doing shit that you do not want to do. It just is. Every day is not going to be great. And, like, I'm not saying that to intimidate you. I'm just saying that's the reality of it. You know, star in your current role, be great in it, grow your role. Don't be a victim of your circumstance. When you're not happy with what you're doing, when shit's not going your way, there's always something you can take away from what you're going. Like, you don't know the value that you're going to have in a couple years from what you learn. Can't skip steps. You got to dominate your role. You got to know everything about it. You got to know everything about your tasks in order to take the next step. You know, build trust. Trust is one of our core values. You know, you need to have your assistants, your coworkers, your players really trust you. What we say that trust is, and is believing and investing in one another without knowing the outcome. Like, you got to be leaving that guy. You got to believe that he's going to be there for you, that he's going to be able to succeed without knowing if he will. And the way you build that is through consistency, right? Like, if every day you do what you're supposed to do, you're there for him, then you're probably going to trust that he's going to be there when you need him. So develop those relationships with trust. I think that's a big one for like any support staff, and even for me. Understand your boss's or your superior's workflow and how you can best accommodate them. Like, are they a person? What time of day are they watching film? When are they available? Do they work best when you give them notes? Does he want to have a meeting? What kind of things does he need to hear? What kind of information, if you present it a certain way, is going to get through to him? You got to kind of evaluate all of those things. And then I've said it, responsibility is greater than money. Like, we're in a healthy situation in Northern Kentucky. I probably could have chased a job at a place that paid me $30,000 more to have to rebuild. But it's about your situation, right? I'm growing as a person. My coach has allowed me to have a lot of roles and responsibilities. And we're in a successful, healthy organization. That, to me, is worth more than a little bit more coin. And I think it just is. And I think it should be for just about everyone if you want to be the best coach you can be. So a couple considerations. Balance. Like, I struggled with balance because it's kind of it's a catch. Like, you want to be the best. You want to dive into whatever you can do. And in order to get to be an assistant coach, it's going to take an unrelenting, focused spirit going 100 miles an hour and trying to be the best that you can. But you do have to try and work in some balance. Like, you need to do things outside. But I kind of, honestly, when I was at the University of Alabama, I would, and I'm not trying to, like, toot my own horn, but I would work until I would, like, basically go to sleep because Coach Grant gave me so much freedom to do my role, like, analyze this, analyze that. And then all of this stuff that I was doing, like, I don't say I was depressed, but I kind of got to a point where, like, I just wasn't happy. I was like, what the hell is the point of what I'm doing with my life? I kind of lost my way a little bit. I was like, okay, I'm going to go work my ass off, have a drink, go to sleep, work my ass off, have a drink, go to sleep. And it was just like, what am I here for? And, you know, I was lucky in Alabama with those Sunday night conversations. We had a guy, I'll never forget, the guy by the name of Chuck Wint, who isn't important to you, but he was a guy that I spent some time just talking about life with and being open with. And he kind of helped me reset myself and kind of find that balance and understand. So I don't know, everywhere you work is probably not going to be like that, but I just know the people that I've worked with Coach Brandon and Coach Grant, like, you can go a million miles an hour and you want to take yourself to the next step, but you can't forget about having a little work-life balance. Like, working in on a Sunday. Because honestly, if it's really your purpose and your passion, like your job and your free time, like, you don't look for that free time, right? Like, your job becomes who you are a little bit in coaching. And that's a little bit dangerous. While it's great and it helps you become the best you can be, it's a little dangerous. So work on your balance with that mental physical health. It's a slippery slope, especially at the age a lot of you guys are. Like, I still remember, this is funny. So I was working my ass off at the University of Florida, and we're playing Alabama. I remember where I was. We're in the Capstone Hotel. I'm working a million hours a week. I'm just happy when I get a meal, when I can feel good. And Billy D sees me. He's like, hey, Sean. You know, he's got his fucking accent. He's like, looking a little bit doughy. I was like, fuck, you know, shit. But I never forgot, and I got my ass on the treadmill. And I worked out, and I got back in shape. But, like, it's a slippery slope. So, you know, your health is important. Your health is important. I'll never forget it. It's unbelievable. Like, it's still in my head when I'm sitting there and I don't want to do another rep. Faith, you know, it's hard to balance it, right? Like, a lot of times recruiting, you're on the road, you may not have time to go to church. You have a road game. You do that. I mean, there's a lot of things, but just, I struggle with it. Like, I've done a shitty job this month, but shitty job with faith, right? Like, is that what you're supposed to say? Probably not. But, like, I would encourage you to take some time, and if you can, work that in, and, you know, be a well-rounded person from that standpoint, because it's very important to you. Social life and decision-making. You're never, like, there's a million examples of being at the top and then making one bad decision, and what does it do to your career? So you got to tread lightly. You know, your social life, like living on campus and in big college towns, that always screwed me up because, like, you know, there's student. I mean, there's just so many potential distractions. And so just be careful, because life, in the book I was reading the other day, life isn't necessarily ruled by a set of rules per se, but by a set of consequences, right? Like, so if you fuck up, or if you, whatever you do, there's going to be a consequence. And that's how, what's going to, like, project the rest of your life is how the decision you made, the consequence from it. So make sure you're, you know, doing your best to put yourself in position to be successful. And then you're not alone, guys. Like, everybody's got something going on. There's days when you show up where you got some shit inside of your head or that's going on with your family. It can be tough, and it's a long season, but, you know, other people are going through things, you know, and just know that talking to someone, going through things, your family, like, and how you interact with people, your players, okay, they got a girlfriend's pregnant, a mom or dad died. Someone got killed, you know, it's just, there's so many things that can be going on, and at the surface, you may not see it, but that, you know, you got to be able to dive in to kind of understand all that stuff as a coach. All right, as an assistant coach, you have to have a willingness to be coached. Like, my coach, John Brandon, pisses me off most days, okay, he does. Like, Sean, where the fuck are the guards at? Why are they running? Get them running. And I'm like, fuck, I just told her. But I don't say that, but that's what I'm thinking, right? You have to be willing to take coaching, much like you want your guys to be willing to take coaching. Yeah, it's fucking, it's unbelievable. I'm like, isn't it enough what I'm giving you, man? Like, no, you got to be bigger than that. You got to understand it. So that's one thing that's really stuck out to me. My rules, just to give you a preview of what could be coming for you as an assistant coach, scouting. I think because of my relationship with Coach Brandon, I get the bulk of our scouting. I did 16 scouts this year, but like, you got to know it in and out. And there was, I don't know if I have the quote in front of me, but like, the biggest thing about a teacher, and in this case, a scout coach, is you have to have a mastery and an understanding of the material so that you can give them the most pertinent information. And that's hard. Like, we all want to rush. I watched 8 games, and they run these plays, and they may set a pin down this time, but he may flare, and he may slip. Well, what are the most important things? And excuse me, but I have a list of questions. A couple of things. Like, it's amazing. Like, all I do is scouting during the year, and then, like, I feel like I couldn't do a scouting report right now because it's been so far from my mind. But, like, a couple of things that we talk about. Like, I think a big thing in scouting, guys, is understand your system and then what's important for that. Like, so if you press, what's their press breaker? Like, if you run, like, we run two bigs lifted in a ball screen motion. Find teams that run your offense. Do they deny the reversal? Do they sit the guy back? We ice ball screens. If you ice ball screens, what have they done to attack ISIS? That may not be in the last 5 games. You know, that may be in the last, it may be last season, and it's like, fuck, John. Like, I mean, they played Bowling Green 38 games ago. I don't even, you know, it's, but you, what have they done? What have they shown they will do? What are their tendencies out of timeouts? What are their tendencies late in games? What's coming? Knowing what's coming. It's like, I don't know, I'm not a mind reader, but I get it. If you've studied and done your homework, you have a pretty good idea. I want to see if there's a couple more that I think are important. Knowing, you know, I think a big thing at the mid-major level is really their rotation, because there's so many weird matchups that show up. Like, if you're in the SEC and you got dudes, you probably have 2 traditional bigs, but like when you're in our level, you could have a 6'3 guy at the 4, and then like, does he shoot? Do we put our 2 on our 4? When this guy's in the game, who are we doing this? So just going through potentially what they could have in the game and knowing in advance who you would put on different guys. Like, that's one thing that we really think about. Talked about ice coverage, you know, how you're going to handle the post, all that stuff. Underneath that, about nothing really earth-shattering there. I just have a deep understanding of your system, and I think that's the best way to be a really good scout coach. And then, like I said, boil it down to the most important things. I'm in charge of a position group, so like my first year it was bigs, right? Like the 5'8 big coach. Like I gave him a lot of resistance down there in the post. Well, I got moved off of it, not because I was bad at it. We brought a guy in who's really good, but he's also 6'5, so that helps. I do the wings. So, like, one thing we all have, like I was talking about earlier, we all have a million fucking ideas, right? I saw the Jazz do this, and Calipari said this. Well, what are your habits? At our level, there's a couple guys that are very advanced. There's a couple guys that are advanced, and then everyone else really has to work on the basics, right? So in order to get where you want to go, it's habits every day. And you have to balance that with the progression of new stuff. Like, you may see something that's great, but you can't lose sight of what the basics are, like footwork, passing, ball handling. You don't need to do, you know, the guys who get on YouTube or whatever, they got like 8 million fucking balls and tennis balls, and I don't know how it applies to basketball, right? So, like, basic habits and then balancing, working new things in. Like, we had a guy. One of our assistants took a guy like almost every day. Heavy ball, low rips, get to the paint, stop. Because he was playing fucking erect. And it wasn't going by anyone. Sure enough, we come out here. you know, workouts here in late July, and guys looking explosive, playing low. And it was just every day, every day. When he has free time before practice starts, rip, rip, rip. Okay, now when he gets there, now we can maybe work in some new stuff. But I think, like, we all love, like, I went to watch the Nets workout for, like, in May this year. That's great, but, like, my guy can't do what Jeremy Lin can do, what Brook Lopez can do. You know, so how does it apply? Find that application while still advancing their game. Core player group, you know, dive into your players on and off the court. We have a group of guys, like four guys we'll get, making sure their academics are in shape. You know, knowing what they're doing off the court, staying in touch with their families. You know, building that relationship, that trust. You know, being there for them. Like, I remember one of the first days on the job, guy comes in my office and he's like, my girlfriend's nuts, like, and you know, and then you're like, oh shit, here it goes. She's chasing him around, cops get involved. His books are at her house, can't do his homework. I mean, it's like, what the fuck? That's the kind of stuff you gotta be there for with those guys. Recruiting coordinator. Like I said earlier, really understand your boss. And like, one thing that's come up for us this year is your style of play can evolve a little bit. So always being in tune to what your coach wants. Like, you can have a badass 6'6 JUCO goon, and my coach, he could be high major, and you got a connection, and my coach is like, well, where's he going to play? You know, it just depends. Like, if that's what your guys are, then bring him that player. But if not, if you want more skill and finesse, then you could look at him. He looks like a fucking twig, and he's got, we can pass and shoot. Coach likes that. You know, you got to know what he wants. So knowing the system of your boss, how do we get started as a recruiting coordinator? Like, you know, for the most part, it's regionally based. Like, I recruit Michigan and Ohio. Someone else does Indiana, Kentucky. So we try and focus on some core states. Then you recruit relationships. So from there, you know, how do you know the kids? Yeah, you rely on relationships. You know, everyone, we get scouting services. I don't know how much of this you guys are aware. You know, they don't know what they're talking about half the time. Sometimes they do. But they do give you a starting point and some kids to stay in touch with. You go watch a team. You watch a kid, you say, okay, he's here, he's there. This kid fits with coach wants, and you kind of go from there. You know, as it goes, you end up developing contacts. You know, it really kind of feeds itself a little bit. And then, you know, just with recruiting at our level, your boss has, like for us, my boss has to see, before he's going to offer a kid or take a kid, it's going to be his decision. So it's great. I can love a kid, but if I don't get it in front of my boss, it's not going to matter. And so I think you always got to, like, one thing we try to do is, as assistants, to keep the cost down, we'll go to, like, certain areas or tournaments, and then my boss will maybe hop around in July, you know, so he can see more kids. Maybe he takes a couple flights during the week, and we stay stationary. So I think, like, this is the kind of stuff that you can't really understand, and you can have a shell, but you can't really understand until you've done it. You know, once the 130 days or whatever start coming up in September 9th, I believe it is, we'll start getting into high schools. You got to accumulate all the high school workout schedules. Who are your main prospects developing your 2019s, your 2018s? Like, that's one thing I've learned at our level. We all call 2019s on the day you can, June 15th, and then it's like, great. Like, our top two guys, we recruited the shit out of them in the league, thought maybe we could get them. Xavier, Butler, Indiana, Purdue. It does, you know, like, you got to have backups and reserves ready. Even if your coach isn't so keen on them, make sure you have some guys, keeping them warm, keeping them in play. You know, my coach likes to say he always had a guy in his back pocket. I don't know. Maybe it's just a fucking myth, but he expects us to have guys in case our top guys that he's spending a lot of time with don't materialize. Scheduling coordinator, it's all fucking lies. Unbelievable. It's like the worst job. Like, they're going to tell you they're going to play you, then they're going to fall through at the last second. But, yeah, I'm in charge of scheduling, so I'm really in charge of scheduling, but I'm more of like a fucking pawn, right? I talk to their guy who's a pawn. We go back and forth. Then our boss shoots it down. Then they say, hey, ask for more money. And then it's like you're like the middle guy, okay? But scheduling coordinator, you get on those message boards. You send out emails, you know, it's a big part of what you do at the mid-major level. It's really a lot harder when you're winning games than we have. When we won 9 games, like, my voicemail probably had, like, was full. Like, the day I got the job, hey, we'd love to play you guys. Now it's like, oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, we're going to go in a different direction. So just start, you know, that's another thing you can think about that's going to come up. And then I do a lot with offense. Like, this time of year, I watch a lot of NBA actions. I watch a lot of our system. We do projects. Coach always assigns projects to us. So just trying to find, you know, ways we can improve, not anything earth-shattering. What's next? For me, it's beginning, you know, the coach is really good. He's invested in my you know, development, so he wants me to begin thinking like a head coach. And I think that's something that if you can find time, you know, why not? Like, I think it was Adam, right? We talked a little bit about that with those guys, just developing, like, what your philosophy is, who you want to be. It'll take in a couple minutes. Like I said, start developing your philosophy, what you believe in. Like, do I want to be Tom Izzo? I don't know. Do I want to be Billy Donovan? I don't know. Anthony Grant. Well, I like this. I like that of them. I like what John did with this. So start picking at your mentors and then watch from afar. Start developing. Developing what you believe in, your core values. So when you decide who you want to be and what your purpose is, like, you want to be a Division I coach, you have to put yourself in position to have habits to get you there. So every day, what are you doing that's going to help you make you become a head coach? Because I think I mentioned it a little bit earlier, there's not like one moment where you had an epiphany like, oh, I'm great now. There's no revolution. It's an evolution. It's every day staying at it, working towards who you want to become. If you want to be in shape, well, what do? You wake up earlier and you work out every day. If you want to be a great coach, you want to be a great offensive coach, maybe you study offense every day. You know, if you want to have a great relationship with your God, pray every day. I mean, but it's the habits. It doesn't just happen. And it's hard. And then once you do that, growing, man, you grow. That's satisfaction. That you get better at who you want to be is like the ultimate high. There's no temporary, you know, having a good night, playing golf, whatever, those are all temporary satisfactions. But when you get better at being who you really want to be and grow closer to that every day, I think that's really powerful. There's a lot of joy that comes out of that. And then, as I said earlier, the successful fail. He who has a why to live can bear almost any how. So if you really believe in and want to be who you want to be, you may fail. It may be tough. You may have to go back. You may have to go from assistant to video coordinator. You may have to go take a high school job. But if you stay at it anyway, if you really want to do it, you can make it happen and you can live with the results. And then master yourself. I think it's the biggest thing. Like, can you be a consistent person every day? Like, I get pissed at myself, right? Like, there's times I look in the mirror like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, why aren't you better? Why are you thinking like that? Why aren't you doing more? Why are you pissed? Why are you bitching about your boss? Why are you doing that? If you can stay out of your own way and keep it positive, because you control your reactions. Like, you can't control what happens. You can control how you react to it. And you can frame who you're going to be. So...